shall appoint the executive secretary, and it would seem to me that the board is going to draw the constitution and bylaws, and they would set the requirements for it.
Right.
So I don't think that this funding study really does that, but that's a good point that we should add into there. Maybe we could add that the executive director will be somebody from this board. That means that we take one of your elected people that's...
Yeah, excuse me. This is, that we've done this both ways before, that sometimes the executive secretary will be picked from the board, but in many cases, they try not to do this. They pick someone outside of the board, so he does not have an attachment to any one of the regions. He would be separate from that and non-voting. The eligibility on the degree situation, I think what we're thinking of there is someone who has had administrative experience, consequently, for a state certificate, you would need the master's degree, and maybe I agree, the degree doesn't make the man, it's the experience behind it. And I think this is just in here, because to be an administrator in the state of Alaska, that is what you need for the qualifications in the school.
You can't waive that. Can't waive that?
Oh yes, there's emergency certificates that are issued. And this again, this is a worksheet, you might say, on a tentative job description. Also the worksheet on the job description of the executive board, made up from people, past boards over the years. We've been putting this information together over the last several years, trying to get the thing off the ground. So a lot of people have had input into this.
But the more of that you read, the more against the Constitution, that'd be a pretty limited position. People that choose.
Yes.
5 years of secondary school administration experience, almost going to have a closed shop for a few people.
And then the salary, of course, is going to put a limitation on the salary we're proposing here is definitely under the majority of the secondary principals in the state of Alaska. And so the thought of the board has been maybe looking at someone who is nearing retirement or something at this stage who could be available on this thing, who has had the experience in the area. Salary is sort of low, but we felt to get the thing off the ground, we wanted to budget them as much as possible to get it in operation. This person, of course, would have to travel a great deal, be out around the state, the service to the member schools, coaches clinics, officials clinics, eligibility.
What about a degree in physical education?
As a requirement? Not necessarily, because we're dealing here with the entire activities picture, which of course would be the total music area, drama, forensics, faith. These areas also.
He could be an administrator, but not have very much knowledge about athletics or music or
what. Usually, if you've been a high school administrator, you end up with a considerable amount of knowledge in most of these areas. It's a big part of the job at the high school level. And as you know, some of the larger schools have activities principals. That's all they do. It becomes a major portion. Right, and this is what we've done in the past. Resource people are named to specific committees. We have committees writing up the handbooks for how to run a basketball tournament, how to run a movie music festival, and so on. And we go out bringing these people to do that. But the experience of the person may very well be physical education, and he's come up through the ranks and through administration.
Another question I have is on the eligibility of any school district, private school, or BIA school. How many BIA schools do we have participating?
Edgecombe, yes. Edgecombe. Going at what the situation is right today, you might say, whether or not BIA schools will continue.
You're going to have several next year, Mr. Chairman, because some of those new regional high schools that are done it.
Will be BIA?
Yeah, or a combination.
Okay. The problem I have is we're creating an incentive to continue the BIA education in the state of Alaska. And I look at that as a question, you know, whether we really want to allow for... I understand that as long as they're BIA, say Mount Edgecombe, in that case, I think possibly it'll take a few years before that place is closed down. But we probably should allow for it to take place, but I just don't like the idea of creating an incentive for BIA schools to stay in existence.
The only ones you'll have will be Cosby and Mount Edgecombe.
Hopefully Cosby won't be there next year.
Mount Edgecombe will be the only one remaining.
The other problem that I have is in the election process, electing people to the, what's it called, to the control,
board control.
Right now I don't understand the regional districts. I have a problem with them being so vast out in the northwest area. And I don't see a guarantee that we won't have representation on the Board of Control. And maybe if that was clarified to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the person on the Board of Control, the state level, is put there by the particular region they come from. The regions are quite autonomous in their own operation. They have their own president, executive secretary, and representative to the Ensemble Board, which is picked from the member schools. In other words, a member unit. Each school that does participate in interscholastic activities would be a member. In Anchorage, you've got a close proximity of six schools there. Each school is a voting member within their region. They vote to send a person to the OSSA board. He comes from one of the schools in that district, and then he's represented on it. Now, Region 2 has a considerable number of schools there. They have picked the principal from Nenana to be on the particular, on the OSSA board representing Region 2. And that's the manner in which regions are represented on the OSSA board at this time, the voting members.
Are you going to be in town for any length of time, or?
I have a vocational meeting in Anchorage on Wednesday.
Are you going to be here?
I can
this
be
afternoon.
Sure. Yes.
If there's no objection from the committee, I would like to sit and meet with the representatives and see if it will clarify some of the problems in here, and if there's any committee member that would like to say stay on and work through this,
appreciate it.
There is a considerable amount of material here.
Senator, would you have any problems? And what we'll do is hopefully come up with the legislation to clarify some of the areas and then have this come back up possibly Wednesday. Hopefully get it going on its way.
Okay.
If there's no further business. At this time, I'd like to take up Senate Bill 652. Representative Mills Anderson wishes to testify on the bill. If you take the chair there, let us know your concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Chance is aware of the concerns expressed by people in my district. And if, for the record, I'd like to read a petition that was signed by approximately 25 people in Dillingham. This letter will address the concerns of parents and daycare mothers, babysitters regarding the licensing of daycare homes as required by the present laws in the state of Alaska. We all appreciate the concern which the state has in providing quality care for children and the need to protect children from neglect and or abuse. The present laws are fine and perhaps essential for largely populated areas of the state or where daycare centers are operated and the parents of young children may not be personally acquainted with daycare staff. However, these very same laws are not desired nor essential in small rural areas where parents are personally acquainted with everyone else and know the various conditions which may or may not be present in the homes in our town. Because the state has seen fit to license a home for daycare and says this is a fine home or situation for children, does not ensure that the particular home is good for my child or any other child. In other words, a license is not everything and does not guarantee everything. Vitally significant is the state's authority and assumption that it has the right to decide what people or homes are best qualified to care for our children. In essence, the state is questioning whether we as parents have the right, ability, and sense to judge good child care, good daycare mothers, and good daycare facilities suited to our needs. We should, as parents, enjoy the right and freedom to select a babysitter without interference from the state. As parents, we will naturally seek the best quality care for our children. We do not need or necessarily want state laws which are designed for heavily populated areas. These laws are a great inconvenience and a nuisance for daycare mothers in rural Alaska. Rural housing compared to populated areas of the state is substandard. Few, if any, of the homes where babysitting is done would meet or pass state standards or the fire marshal codes. Yet the quality of care may be excellent. If the daycare mothers are continually harassed by state officials over licensing, chances are that the good daycare mothers are very apt to quit daycare altogether. In addition, what qualities or qualifications do state officials possess that sets them above parents in judging good daycare and good daycare facilities? Any repairs needing to be done to meet licensing standards would put a financial burden upon the daycare mother or family. Furthermore, babysitters often are renting or living in someone else's home. most people cannot afford and should not be expected to make expensive repairs in someone else, on someone else's property. There are a few landlords who want or would make any changes in their apartments to suit a state law and enable one or two tenants to do child care, child daycare. These laws need to be modified or changed to take into consideration the living situations of rural Alaska. We want and demand quality care for our children. We also demand and deserve the right to select this care without state interference. Mr. Chairman, as I stated earlier, Senator Chance is aware of the situation, and I spoke to, I believe, your staff assistant, and she brought to my attention the fact that this bill was coming up and would hopefully alleviate some of the problems that the people are concerned about in my district.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions by any of the members?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm.
And Gary Sheridan, I believe, is going to testify for the administration.
I'm Gary Sheridan from the Department of Health and Social Services, standing in for Mr. Sam Granato, the director of the Division of Social Services, being asked that I come and testify for the department. I would like to read the position paper on Senate Bill 652 that's been passed out. But first, we overlooked one point I'd like to address before I go into the context of our position paper, and that is the definition of a daycare center, which limits the number of children to six, and I think it's the last page of the proposed legislation. We assumed that this was an error in the bill, as it speaks to both the daycare center and then the family daycare setting. It was not our intention to see it as being established at six children in daycare centers. So we overlooked that, so consequently the point isn't referenced in the department's position.
Instead of reading the position paper, we have this before us. I think if you just hit on the high sides of it.
One of the major points of the bill, I think, broadens it to adult facilities and beyond what we are presently doing with children facilities. And we felt that the seeming requirement that a state agency be licensed by the department to engage in functions delegated to it by the legislature and the governor would be, in our view, inappropriate and may be challengeable under law. There's apparently other states that had looked at having one state agency license another state agency, and they've had some legal scrutiny of that. In fact, I guess there's been several states that came to the conclusion that one state agency would be able to, say, approve the standards of another agency or make a recommendation in that sense to the legislative body or the governor's office as to the enforcement of a standard. So our feeling is that if that be true, then what we'd like to see the Department of Health and Social Services have is the approval, the responsibility of making an approval, then the legislative body would have the effect or the authority for that body, such as with the Department of Administration and the Pioneers Homes and concerned of nursing facilities. We don't feel that it would be up to us to license it, but up to it's guided by the legislature. And that is based on what we've understood with other states. That was one of the
Are you finished?
I believe the last part of the position paper is fairly explanatory, so I'll go into that.
Okay.
Position two.
Are there any questions by committee members?
I would, it's not a question, it's more of a statement of explanation. This bill was drafted so that it would provide a vehicle for discussion, because there are so many people that are having so many problems over the total idea of licensure. So we wanted to be able to provide a forum for discussion to see how we can be able to work out the problems that now exist. The family daycare setting has not been addressed in the statute, and yet that's one of the areas that has been a subject of difficulty because of the provisions for the licensure, I guess, and regulation. There's also been some difficulties over licensing facilities for adults and some of the full cost of care. Serious concern among the number of people that they want to state operated agencies that have to meet the same standards that non-state agencies do. So the bill as originally introduced was not expected to be a finished product, but as a service medium to which we developed more of the discussion.
That's all I have.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on the bill? If you give your name and okay. Address for the record.
Lois Sturgis, Douglas. And I agree with what Representative Anderson said regarding rural communities. They can't, or any small community, can't comply with the regulations either by the Department of Health and Social Services or the fire marshal. And Mr. Sheridan mentioned that there was some change in daycare centers or family daycare centers. What I objected to mainly was the maximum of 6 children under age 14. If a babysitter is competent, depending on the ages of the children, they can take more than 6. If you get a good babysitter, they should be limited. I understand the Department of Health and Social Services can make waivers for various part-time students that stop in or depending on the age of the children, but they are still governed by the fire marshal regulations. And I was wondering if a home daycare center which receives no federal or state subsidies, no low-income parents, it's a contract between the parents and the operator of the home. The parents pay the bill and the operator moves the home. I would wonder if the parents could sign a waiver releasing the state from responsibility for the fire marshal's regulations on this number of 6 children. I can't see where that number would apply. If the home is safe, they check the wiring, the furnace, etc., then I can't see why it should be limited, mainly because there aren't enough daycare centers or private babysitters in June are willing to take on 2 or 3 children. It doesn't pay them to set all the standards, meet the standards of the department. The group home mentions they can take up to 10 children, and I would assume these are foster children who would be under supervision for 24 hours a day. I was wondering why they could take 10, whereas a babysitter who's only had the child 7 or 8 hours is limited to 6. And that was my main complaint.
Yes.
You hit on the purpose for the bill, because so many of these things are being done by regulation. And in order to bring them out for discussion, we brought them out into the bill by pinpoint. The number of children, 6, as you stated, is being enforced now in family daycare settings, not family daycare settings being defined. One of the keys, I think, is on page 2, down that subsection 2. The county department then must establish standards and procedures whereby waiver of all or part of the requirements for licensure under this chapter may be obtained.
I missed that.
Then I don't have it. Well, that's right. The key portion of the bill.
Right.
There. Mm-hmm. And then all of these other things, the things that are now being done by regulation without any standard procedure for obtaining waivers. And I think our biggest problems are with fire marshals.
They are.
And trying to deal with the fire marshal and getting waivers is something that's
And I assume if the home is safe, well, my babysitter has been checked by the fire marshal, has met all the requirements as far as safety, but he said she has 2 children at home. Even though part of these children just come for an hour in the afternoon or drop in after school, and I would assume these older children would be an asset to getting the 3 and 4 year olds out in case of fire. There just doesn't seem to be any leeway on the regulations.
And your question too about the number in the grid home, that's already in existing statute. 7 years ago, when we said there was no definition for grid home, so we have no other purchase and services permit. We put through the definition there, but by the fire marshal's regulation, maybe something is going to be. But on grid homes, the fire marshal is imposing institutional standards for safety. They have to follow the same ones as hospitals, which runs across the sky high. And so that's another problem that we have to deal with.
Is the fire marshal following regulations from federal regulations, or who sets them up? Would it be Health and Social Services?
No, it's the fire marshal.
That's why when I was talking to your staff here, I was questioning if the fire marshal could send a representative, because in following through the various complaints I've received as the secretary upstairs and also my problem with my own personal babysitter, it seems to be the fire marshal is the stopping point.
Yeah, several years ago, in addition to separating out group home, part of that was to try to get the fire marshal to see that there is a difference between a group home and a hospital or an institution. And we passed a resolution requesting the fire marshal's office establish different level within the fire code for the group home, that it did have to be more stringent than a foster home, but it did certainly have to meet the requirements of an institution. They've never done that. Instead, they go through a very difficult and slow process of waivers, item by item. And it's not a standardized process, apparently. So that's why we wanted them to kind of come up with some sort of standard procedure.
That's what I'd like to see, because my babysitter had passed all the requirements met by or set out by the Department of Health and Social Services. And the fire marshal came in and measured her room and counted heads, and she had it all listed as to the number of children there. And he said, well, one has to go. What, you know, what child are you going to kick out? It's mine, I'll just quit my job. You cannot meet these requirements.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Yes. Mm-hmm. If you'd give your name and address for the record, please.
Patricia Bergen, I'm on Thane Road. Mm-hmm. And my situation has been lightly touched upon by this last person. But I have one that is in school and one that is from preschool. So now you come upon a situation where a babysitter is being counted for this child she has for an hour in the afternoon as a full-time child. Okay, it ends up being a situation where financially, if she's trying to make some money on it, she's going to have to end up charging for a full-time child, even though she only has the child for an hour during the day. Well, I can't afford it. And when you come into this situation where you only have 6 kids, you're limiting her to being forced to doing this. There's some of us that our only income is by working. And so this is the situation that we're caught in. You've not mentioned the situation of drop-ins, too, where maybe a mother is sick and there's no other recourse other than to try to get them to a babysitter for a while. Then what do you do with the excess children? My babysitter was told to get rid of some of her kids. So we decided, well, we would try it since one of the ones that was being counted was mine that was in school. So we tried out another babysitter. It turned out to be an excellent babysitter, but the kids are small, they have emotions, and they've been upset by it. We tried it for over a month. And my youngest one is in preschool. When she sits in a closet and cries for an hour, then I think there ought to be something, you know, to in, take in the aspect that we've got one that's babysitters maybe an hour in the afternoon. This is my main concern. when they're just told to get rid of them, they don't say, well, slowly phase it out and get it down to six. They're told to get rid of it, or you're going to have a $200 fine for each kid that you have over for every day that we can catch you at it. This is getting to where it's depending on the personality of the babysitter, some it frightens, and some just make them mad enough to quit. So these are the main things that I've run across. And again, I had in mind why the 10 for the one group and only 6 for the other. My babysitter also has a child that is there. Her own child overlaps by an hour or two, maybe, during the course of a week. And I'm sure in some situations they're going to count this young person as a full-time child of her own. In other cases, maybe they won't. I don't know, you know, that particular facet. But anyway, I would like to see something done about children who are in school, because we certainly can't have those young people going home to an empty house.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions by any member? We have one question of you, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes.
You know what the regulations that are imposed in your area, the number of children right now?
They're the 6 children. Is this what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
She's being allowed 6 children right now.
That's for in her home.
That's for in her home.
And if they come by and there's a drop-in that is there, and they come by to check, and the drop-in is one extra child over that 6, then the license is jeopardized.
$200 fine. It seems kind of a very fine line that's being drawn for an overlap of maybe just a couple of hours or maybe a drop-in situation.
Senator Chance, I asked a question on this. This is set up by regulations right now.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add that we're seriously considering right now if we're proposing standards for family care that would permit more than 6 children in a family daycare home when the caregiver's own children were counted within that 6 count.
Do you have any exceptions for, say, the children that are in there for just an hour or so?
Would you respond to that?
Yeah, I can respond to that. Regulations have been essentially ready for hearings, and all we are waiting for now is to get them printed, and we anticipate hearings in April, and hope that as many people show up for those hearings. Interestingly, at the same time, those regulations do contain a waiver provision for unusual situations. I think we'll just have to wait and see what testimony is at that time. And I do think it's important that Perry mentioned that more than 6 are being considered, which would contradict what was in the bill. Counting your own children, the bill now limits it to 6 children. And we're considering allowing more.
Senator?
Yes, but what are your current regulations? They're 10-1 in daycare centers and 6-1 in family units.
That's correct. Well, it's
and
no more than 6 at any one time.
That's
what
it wants to. That is the way I'm interpreting it, because we went through this in the Anchorage area. I think the way the regulation was written.
In Anchorage, it's no more than 5. Borough could permit. The Anchorage municipality requires a facility to be a center when they reach 6 children. So
not under the current regulations. Those were their proposed regulations 2 years ago. Currently it's 6 in family daycare centers and 10-1 in the centers. And there were exceptions allowed for drop-ins. These were permanent children, like the lady's problem, she brings her occasionally. You know, they were tolerating this. But the general move has been to just lower them across the board in all centers. And because, you know, it's been a bone of contention in almost every municipality in the state.
Well, I might just comment that no one has been fined as one of those to do it. As many people show up exist.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on the bill?
Donna Simonson from Douglas. And although she said that no one has been fined $200 to date, there has been people have, I'm a licensed daycare home. And during December, I had two children open for 2 hours a day and was told that if I did not get rid of these two children, that I would have a court order against me. Now, this is how I'm making some spending money, is by taking care of the kids. And I'm not doing it just for the money, but I have two children of my own that need the companionship. And when people start talking about court orders and a state trooper on the front door, I don't need this. And I'm sure that other people feel the same way, and I'm sure that this is why people are not getting licensed the way they should be. And I'm sure that I have been very much against the licensing since this has started. The rules as strict and as harsh as they have been.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions by anyone?
Just might tell her about the story I heard of the state trooper that passed by the home and there were all these children playing out in the yard. And he walked up and said, lady, do you have a license for this? And she said, yes, he has a license.
I'd like to ask one question to the department. That's who sets the number of children? Is it the Department of Health and Social Services or the Fire Marshal?
In a daycare center or
in
a daycare?
The family or either one.
Current regulations restrict the total in family daycare to six in a family daycare home. The Fire Marshal does make the measurement in the center and determines the output.
So it's just your department now that we're dealing with as far as family daycare centers.
Basically, however, when you exceed the number six, I maybe should add some verifying information. We've been talking with the fire marshal, and his concern is when the six children are unrelated. Sanitation requirements are concerned whether there are any children at all, and our regulations deal with children. Which I've just announced are changing. Does that clarify? The fire marshals, the uniform building code and or life safety code, I'm not sure which one, specifies that the children who are unrelated to the facility may not exceed six and does not speak to related children. And that's where his involvement comes in. In other words, his requirements apply then. That's one reason we're considering changing hours and looking at expanding the total number of children.
Ma'am,
yes.
How much conflict do you have between your regulations and the fire code?
Not a real conflict. Well, except that ours speaks to including related children.
No, I'm talking about square footage.
Oh, square
you want the distance measured from the inside perimeter of the walls, and the fire marshal will measure from the outside perimeters. You exclude the sanitary facilities in the building for square footage for allowable occupancy. And this is where the fire marshal is having problems trying to work within the regulations that Health and Social Services has set, not on theirs, because I'll show you a room that measures 20 by 40 at the Baranoff Hotel that has a load occupancy of 300. And in a daycare center, you've reduced it to 50 feet for every child, excluding the kitchen facility, excluding the bathrooms, and then measuring it from the inside diameter of the walls and excluding the parent waiting room.
Well, the fire marshal does the measurement for us, and we have accepted his measurements.
On your regulations, though, I want to make this clear. You know, we aren't going to pass the buck on that fire marshal.
Well, no, I'd rather he be here to speak for himself. It's my understanding that 35 square feet per child, as specified in the uniform are not uniform building code, the life safety code has been applied all over the state except possibly in Anchorage, where the state fire marshal's office does not have an Anchorage. And I understand in Anchorage that it is 30.
No.
Are there any questions?
As I said, I'm a licensed daycare home, and one of the other licensed daycare home in Douglas just had a fire inspection, and she was to 50 square feet per child, and her backyard, which is fenced, was not counted, and neither were her upstairs sitting room where the children watch TV or listen to records. The bathrooms were not counted, neither was the kitchen or their waiting
room.
So I'm sorry,
No, that's fine.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Bathrooms and hallways are excluded by definition in the life safety code.
Well,
and the kitchen.
Well, what she has done is she's taken a whole half a duplex and turned it into strictly daycare. And the upstairs isn't counted, although the TV room is up there for the kids. And the backyard isn't counted. And when you get 50 square feet per person, that's an awful lot of room for one little kid.
Yes.
Okay, you have a difference in different types of homes, too. Some of them clear out the living furniture and put in the little tables and the little furniture for a little table with a bookcase where the toys and things are kept except in the playing room. You have another type of home, same type of footage, except they've got the living room couch there, they've got a table there that they use for themselves, lamps, other types of furniture that you have in the house. Now, how are you going to compare for fire safety, one home against the other? Because it's the same square footage, but yet that house that doesn't have the extra stuff in it, you know darn good well those kids would be able to get out a lot faster, you know, if there was something to come out. So there's that variability too.
Are there any other questions? What I'd like to recommend at this time is send it a chance to take the bill and come out with some of the substitutes to addressing some of the problems that have been requested here. Hopefully the department would consider changing its regulations as they are proposing to do. And what we'll do is continue to watch for what the department plans to do in this matter. And if you happen to feel that the bill should come out, I wish you would.
What I'll try to do is get the department and the fire marshal together and see if we can work out things cooperatively, and if it doesn't work out in that manner so that regulations come out that are compatible and workable, then we'll go back to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, one more question.
Oh, yes.
Got to be. What's the department doing in regards to the new federal regulations? Is the commissioner going to request that we divest ourselves from federal daycare funds, or are we going to go to 4-1?
I understand that there are 6 bills that were all still being rescued at the federal level. Mr. Donald, the director, flew back there and personally testified that his testimony did have some impact regarding the special problems of Alaska. And every one of those bills being considered has a whole harmless provision. We are very confident that Alaska is not going to put the wall. It looks very much like amendments that have been made will be very helpful to us, and we don't run into a real problem, particularly amendments where there are a few AFDC children in the facility.
I have just one more question. I didn't recall seeing in the position paper or hearing. What are your feelings on the 6-1 ratio?
My personal feelings?
No, the department.
Oh.
I mean, blanketly, up to 14 years instead of,
well,
you know,
my
category.
Well, it's not in the position paper, so I can't speak for the department. But I have announced, and certainly I was involved in the drafting of the regulations that will soon be out as soon as we can get them back from the printers. I have mixed feelings, personally, on the matter.
Now, but where were those levels set? What are they? They go from infants to 3-year-olds, how many to how many, but when you get to the bulk of the children, 5 to 14, what are the new regulations proposed?
Well, since they have not been cleared by the commissioner's office yet. I don't think I should be announcing what's in them. If you can hold on for another few days or a couple of weeks till we get them back from the printers.
I ask for one reason. I have a letter in my file from Dr. Collier, the Anchorage Borough, that he alludes to that on good authority, he has it that the new state regulations will be attempted on. Now, I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
That's current state regulations. The new state regulations will expand and as drafted, will expand and have different breakdowns for these other regions. I can guarantee you that, but I really cannot speak to what's in them until we have the commissioner's office.
Thank you very much. Which bill would you like to
I guess the one on the call is 653 will be the first one.
653. We'll take up Senate Bill number 653 at this time. Gary, I believe you were here to testify on this again.
Very briefly, the department supports the bill in its entirety, it's against 653. After looking through it myself, I do. That's we do support the bill as it stands. So, unless there's some questions.
Are there any questions by any members? Is there anyone else here that would like to testify on the bill? Gene, I haven't had a chance to read this. Could you just explain it to me?
Basically, what we're doing, and this is in response to the study of by the Child Welfare League, the state establishing what our posture is, what our commitment is to children and families, and do it in just plain black and white. So we're trying in this just to put into the statute what the state's position is, that it's purposes, title as it relates to children is to secure for each child the care and guidance, preferably in his own home, that will serve the moral, emotional, mental, and physical welfare of the child and the best interest of the community to preserve and strengthen the child's family ties whenever possible, removing him from the custody of his parents only when his welfare or safety or the protection of the public cannot be adequately safeguarded without removal, and when the child is removed from his family to secure for him custody, care, discipline, as nearly as possible, equivalent to that which should be given by his parents. Just trying to state what our commitment and policy should be instead of having it framed up.
Are there any questions? What's the wish of the committee on this? Is there a motion?
Yeah, I'll move. Yeah.
Okay, how many do you pass?
Just six.
We'll take up Senate Bill 654 at this time.
With this one, Mr. Chairman, the trade with other industrial nations, the United States is a latecomer in the field of social programs. In the last couple of years, however, Congress has passed considerable legislation and appropriated hundreds of millions of dollars. The nature of congressional funding and U.S. federalism has resulted in a very fragmented system of administration, planning, and delivery. While significant strides have been made in improving the quality of life of many Americans, most people would agree that benefits would greatly be improved if the human service system were less fragmented and complex and better understood. Part of our problem has been it's extremely difficult for governors, legislators, budget officers, planners, or even human service administrators to conceptualize all the components of the human services system. During the past 2 years, Council of State Governments has studied state human services organizations and the impact on human services integration. One of the problems observed during the 2 years was the difficulty general purpose government officials have in understanding and making decisions about the human services delivery system. This problem is exacerbated by the absence of a basis for communication between these officials and the professionals who administer human services programs. What we're trying to do here with Senate Bill 654 is to describe a framework which can be utilized to establish communication between general purpose government officials, human service professionals, and the public in order to establish a basis for making the critical decisions which affect human service programs and clients they serve. What we're asking here, I'll go down through a timeline, is that rather than starting out on, this also was an outgrowth of the Child Welfare League that pointed out that the Department of Health and Social Services is primarily derivative and contingent upon federal programs and federal funds. And the statute states that the department shall provide services in cooperation with the federal government and shall receive federal funds for these services, etc. The previous bill was also to address that so that there would be a state policy. Now we're saying rather than coming up with or receiving the federal funds and the federal guidelines and regulations and trying to fit our programs to meet those federal funds and federal guidelines, we're saying we want the State Department to go out to make an assessment of the needs in the state, then to establish the funding where they can be, so forth and so on. So a proposed timeline for this type of bill, coming up with a state plan first, is to start out in, say, between July and September. They would hold public meetings to prepare the state plan for the following fiscal year. And each fiscal year, the department shall hold public meetings in each region for the purpose of gathering information and testimony on availability and need of social services. Public notices shall be published in local newspapers to inform citizens of meeting time and place. Then, also at that same time, running concurrently, would be the formulation of the state's needs analysis. The department would be required to annually inventory and assess requirements of the state and social services area. Input may be from any number of sources, including public meetings held throughout the state. Basically, I think they count on the needs assessment as being in response to a written questionnaire, so you'd have both the public input here from before a plan is ever designed. Now, most of the time, the public input is after the plan is designed and they respond to it. Then by the third week in October, they would come up with a proposed state plan for following the fiscal year. It would be released to the public and to the legislature. Then, from the third week in October to the third week in January, they would have the public input hearings. At this one, the public would be able to respond to the plan. The first public hearings were so that the public could be heard as to what they identified their needs for. This now gives them a plan to respond to. Then by the third week in January, they would submit this plan to the legislature, complete with their establishment of goals, what they expect to accomplish, and then this particular given year with their budget and so forth. Within the state plan, we would recognize that there would be some goals that would be unattainable for a while, but they're goals to shoot at. And by the department of coming up with the state plan and then identifying the goals during the prioritizing and their funding request in that manner, we feel like we probably have a state plan to be able to develop a delivery system that is better coordinated and more responsive to the needs of the people rather than being designed around the availability of federal funds. I would recognize that they would have a difficulty in the first year particularly in trying to implement this because of the necessity of holding the first public hearings during that first quarter of the year at the same time that they are trying to get adjusted to their new budget at the beginning of the new fiscal year. In discussing it with the
various people in the department, I recognize the problems they would have there and the necessity for some additional personnel that could be assigned strictly to this. So it's sort of like trying to rebuild a house while you're living in it. There might be a possibility that portions of this, such as the holding of public hearings and handling the needs assessment operation there, some of that could be contracted out either by the department or by the legislature to an operation such as child welfare leave, at least for the first year to get a start. They can go ahead and operate 1 year the way they're going now under their new budget. But by the time we get back in here next January, then this whole hearing process, the state plan development, would have been put together, and their next year's budget proposal would come in and related to that state plan.
Gary, I've noticed here at the end that the department does support the concept, except for the funding portion, which is, you know, beside the fact. So if you would just run through possibly and first the...
Mr. Chairman, basically, I might point out that detail here more so, but briefly, the proposed legislation parallels what is mandated for the department to do for the title funding that it receives right now. So that, in fact, the legislation is along the guidelines of the national goals, which are set forth by public law, and the Social Security Act. However, that does pose a little problem in that if national goals would change, then the immediate question is whether we'd have to amend our legislative law as well to follow that pattern. So that's a question in our mind. What the bill is really doing is giving you a chance is expanding it beyond the capacities right now of the planning process, which we are obligated to do under Title 20. Right now, there's one person designated as that Title 20 planner, which is involved in the assessment of needs as it relates to the Title 20 mandates and the federal regulations for Social Security Act. Basically, we feel that we would definitely have to add a ongoing planning staff, because this proposed legislation not only includes the Title 20, but it goes beyond that into the private sector. We have to have some authority to involve other public and private agencies in this assessment of statewide income. Senator Chance also pointed out the problem that we'd have with the first quarter getting into that time frame, and there would have to be some recognition there in that we wouldn't really have sufficient time to get it into implemented in the first year before.
Are there any questions about committee members? Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify on?
Well, I would like to quick. I do have two questions on this, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Where are your federal funds coming from this time, 20? This one?
Yes.
And who came up with 1, 2, 3, 6 personnel?
I might pronounce any chance that Mr. Granada personally assigned this to a staff, several staff members involved in developing the fiscal note, and they came out with about, I think the budget was well over $250,000, and we pinned it down to what we considered a minimal amount of staff that would lend some ongoing nature to the
assessment and the planning the way it's structured on a statewide basis.
This came out fairly close to, I feel a bit more than the budget we put together for it, talking to Mr. Bernardo.
Well, some of these costs are assuming that we'd have a need for publishing public hearings, as you pointed out earlier in the testimony.
What I figured you'd probably need would be three more staff people, the planner, the statistical analyst, and one clerical.
Well, they have another planner, I know, originally planned, and Mr. Bernardo looked at that very closely, because it's his recommendation.
You think you'd be able to hold public hearings when this is on money?
That was my impression. This is what he anticipated. You know, it's a tight, very tight budget.
Thank you very much. No, Colin, you wanted to testify on this thing?
Yes, thank you.
Did you want to do this or that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Honorable legislators, my name is Devin Call. I'm the state director of Alaska Home Health Aid Service, which is a private nonprofit agency serving its 8 year of service. We have a contract with the state, our chief contract, the Department of Health and Social Service, several other contracts with the borough, Bureau of Indian Affairs, and some of the various Native groups. There is a great need to reinforce the home in helping with home management, budgeting, child care. That is part of our service. As you know, in the 30s and 40s, there was a scourge of tuberculosis, which meant that many of the parents of today were brought up in institutions. They did not have a pattern of home life by which to build their own homes and help their children. We work in the areas of health, mental health, and the level of living, which includes home management, budgeting, child care. We have four professional persons on our staff. Myself, as state director, I'm a social worker. I have two registered nurses and a home economist. We work with, and we're trying to do this. We're not trying to build an empire, but we would like very much to dovetail our services in with the services of the various divisions of the Department of Health and Social Service. For instance, if the job spec of the public health nurses were revised to include support to the homemakers throughout the state, we don't want to ask for money to send our staff out over the state. But if we could work with health, mental health, and social service divisions of the department, we can strengthen homes. This is what we're working toward now. At the present time, we have, as some of you know, received a grant of $56,000 for training. And we are working very closely with many groups in order to prevent fragmentation and duplication of service, but to make our dollars go as far as possible. We are helping to keep children in their own homes so that they're not removed unnecessarily by the courts because of neglect or abuse. Many of the parents need help in knowing how to love their children and how to care for their children. With the aged, last year, we cared for 231 over 65 years of age in their own homes throughout the state. And some of these are over 100 years of age. One was born during the Russian regime. and one near Eskimo, over 100, ran away. If you can speak of a person over 100 running away, ran away from a nursing home, and someone helped her get back home, and she's receiving clinical service. The medical care, isn't that wonderful? I think it's wonderful for a 100-year-old person who's run away. We are now training, well, this past month under this grant, we have trained 39, and more than half of them are Eskimo Indian Aleut. Last month, I went to Fairbanks, it was 48 below, and of course, none of the native people missed a class. I mean, what does 48 below mean to them? They're used to it, they were born into it. And they had their tape recorders, they were asking questions,